Hello, my name's Dave Emery. This next half-hour segment is the second segment in a two-part series entitled Fun with Science, a tongue-in-cheek title. The title alludes to research and development that has been conducted in recent years that has primarily been conducted, at least the focus of this program, deals with research that has been conducted in the biological and geophysical sciences. We have been talking in the last segment about research that was done into the possibility of affecting seismic weapons, that is, causing earthquakes. This research had been conducted by both the Soviet Union and the United States, and the possibility that this research may have been successful should not be too readily dismissed, although this is a speculative item. This program was excerpted from the One Step Beyond program of February 2nd, 1997. Research credit on the following goes to a listener. This is from the New York Times Science section, entitled Science Times. This is January 21st, 1997. This is an article by William J. Broad, B-R-O-A-D. It's entitled Seismic Mystery in Australia, Quake, Meteor, or Nuclear Blast. What it does not say is perhaps man-made earthquake. That's a possibility that is entertained here but not dealt with at the length that it should have been dealt with. Returning once again to this article from the New York Times, January 21st, 1997, in the Living Arts section, Science Times by William J. Broad, Seismic Mystery in Australia, Quake, Meteor, or Nuclear Blast. We read the following. Now, the article reads in part, I should say, as follows. Late on the evening of May 28th, 1993, something shattered the calm of the Australian outback and radiated shock waves outward across hundreds of miles of scrub and desert. Around the same time, truck drivers crossing the region and gold prospectors camping nearby saw the dark sky illuminated by bright flashes, and they and other people heard the distant rumble of loud explosions. The mysterious event might have been lost to history, except for the interest of government investigators in Australia and the United States, who eventually came to wonder if the upheaval was the work of the Japanese doomsday cult accused of the poison gas attack on Tokyo subways in 1995 that killed 12 people and hurt thousands. The fear was that the terrorists had acquired nuclear arms or other weapons of mass destruction and had been testing them that night in the Australian wilds. The hope was that the upheaval was an earthquake, a mining explosion, or even a meteorite strike from space, any natural event. The evidence was ominous. Investigators discovered that the cult, Aum Shinrikyo, had tried to buy Russian nuclear weapons and had set up an advanced laboratory on a 500,000-acre ranch in Australia near the puzzling upheaval. At the ranch, investigators found that the sect had been mining uranium, a main material for making atomic bombs. The clues were judged worrisome enough to set in motion a wide scientific investigation that is still going on today. And skipping down in the article, after discussion of the possibility that it was a nuclear explosion, and after comparing, as by the way, there is a visual comparison here of the seismographic reading from the mystery event, the seismographic reading of a regional earthquake, the seismographic reading of a mining blast, and the seismographic reading of a Chinese nuclear test. The mystery event does not correspond to any of these with any great degree of precision, although there are some degrees of similarity with a number of them. But it does not correspond to any of them, so this is something entirely different, or at least different, not maybe entirely different. Skipping down in the article, we read, "But the signature of the disturbance seemed to be more that of an earthquake or a meteorite strike than a nuclear explosion. Typically, the shock waves from nuclear blasts begin with a very distinct wave or spike as earth and rock are violently compressed. The signal then tends to become more fuzzy as surface rumblings and shudders and aftershocks create a seismologic din. With earthquakes, it is usually the opposite, with gentle jostling suddenly becoming bigger and more violent. The main problem for analysis of the mystery event is that such clear distinctions tend to break down when the size of the disturbance under study is relatively small, as was the case in the Australian outback. Nevertheless, the IRIS experts, that's the Australian body studying this, judge that the violent episode was probably natural in character rather than being a man-made blast, prompting official Washington to breathe a sigh of relief." Before interrupting, before you sigh relief, consider the following. "No mention of the seismic riddle was made in well-publicized hearings that Senator Nunn ran in late October and early November of 1995 on Aum Shinrikyo as a case study in what fanatics with large financial resources can do to acquire weapons of mass destruction. Still, one remote but still worrisome possibility remained. Aum Shinrikyo had apparently studied seismic warfare and artificially triggering earthquakes, a terrifying prospect for quake-prone Japan. The cult apparently sent a party of its members to the former Yugoslavia to study the work of Nikola Tesla, the discoverer of alternating current, who toyed with a theory of seismic weapons before he died in 1943. At the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, the members seem to have reviewed Tesla's thesis and other research papers concerning such weapons. Many geophysicists view seismic warfare as a fantasy that is highly unlikely to ever materialize. Even so, the subject has been quietly studied for decades by governments worldwide, including the Soviet Union and the United States during the Cold War. So IRIS investigators kept pressing ahead to solve the Australian riddle, trying to determine if the event was an earthquake or a meteor strike. The team worked with computers and lengthy calculations, eventually showing that an iron meteorite striking the Earth at an oblique angle could have created the seismic upset. A meteorite 5 or 6 feet wide would have dug out a crater some 300 feet in diameter, the team calculated. Despite preliminary searches, no impact crater has been found in the Australian outback. That would suggest that probably was not a meteorite, although again the jury is out. Aum Shinrikyo was a very interesting institution, verily, even as I speak, in the beginning of February 1997, inquiries and trials in connection with the Aum Shinrikyo wave of terror in Japan are ongoing. I would note that Aum Shinrikyo had developed profound connections with the Japanese National Security Establishment, had infiltrated the Japanese police. They had indeed acquired not only a tremendous financial war chest, they were developing all sorts of weapons, some of them with a great deal of success, as their sarin attacks on the Tokyo subway indicated. This was an organization that also had penetrated a number of other countries, including Russia and the former Soviet Union, with great success. This also was an organization that had great hostility towards the United States. By the way, some of the top scientific experts for Aum Shinrikyo believed that the Kobe earthquake may have been a man-made earthquake, and they were indeed working feverishly on developing electromagnetic weapons to cause earthquakes, hence the interest in the work of Nikola Tesla. I would also note, as I noted at the time in connection with Aum Shinrikyo, that Aum Shinrikyo, although it's gone down as a mystical organization, had profound and, for our purposes, very, very relevant political overtones to it. I've noted in the past in connection with Aum Shinrikyo that the Aum Shinrikyo terror attacks were one of the factors that helped to undermine the confidence in the socialist government of Japan the first time the liberal Democrats had been replaced in the electoral politics of post-war Japan. The liberal Democrats, not only being very closely connected to the United States and heavily influenced by the CIA, they were also to a considerable extent a repository for many of the fascist elements in Japan, who were put right back in power once again to guard against communism. That's basically what we did in Germany and Italy and elsewhere as well. Shinrikyo had some very interesting political leanings, and I would note that in this particular regard. We're going to touch on Aum Shinrikyo right now. There is an excellent book currently available on Aum Shinrikyo. I personally think that the investigation into Aum Shinrikyo could and should go even farther than this particular investigation. Nonetheless, I think this is a very good book, and I would strongly recommend it to members of the listening audience. The book that I'm about to read from is called The Cult at the End of the World. It's co-authored by David E. Kaplan, K-A-P-L-A-N, and Andrew Marshall. It's published in hardcover by Crown Books, and is copyrighted 1996. Again, it's subtitled The Terrifying Story of the Aum Doomsday Cult from the Subways of Tokyo to the Nuclear Arsenals of Russia. Again, the title of the book, The Cult at the End of the World, by David E. Kaplan, K-A-P-L-A-N, and Andrew Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. It's published by Crown Publishers in New York in hardcover, copyright 1996. The ISBN number is 0-517-70543-5. And I would strongly recommend this to members of the listening audience interested in Aum Shinrikyo. It is currently available, as I understand, as I speak, in February of 1997. of Aum Shinrikyo and some of their political leanings and inclinations, we read of the teachings given to Aum Shinrikyo children, formal education was virtually non-existent. Up to a quarter of Aum's children had never attended proper schools. Kids as young as five were taught to admire Adolf Hitler and told that he was still alive. The rest of their curriculum consisted of Asahara's teachings, cult rituals, breathing exercises, and children. And again, noting the admiration of Adolf Hitler, for Adolf Hitler, held by Asahara and the cult, and I've noted that in the past in connection with discussions of Aum Shinrikyo. Speaking of Shoko Asahara, to govern the republic, Aum set up 24 ministries that eerily reflected the Japanese state its members were so eager to destroy. Murai became Minister of Science and Technology. The other appointments were not without irony. Hayakawa the engineer, intent on giving Aum the means of mass destruction, was made Minister of Construction. Seiichi Endo, E-N-D-O, who spent his time culturing bacterial weapons, rose to Minister of Health and Welfare, and the cult's lawsuit-happy attorney, Yoshinobu Aoyama, was named Minister of Justice. Skipping down, Asahara was a great admirer of Hitler and shared the Führer's dream of a thousand-year Reich. As his power grew, however, Aum's increasingly corpulent guru resembled not so much Hitler as Caligula, the first-century Roman emperor remembered for his debauched and tyrannical rule. And perhaps the most interesting discussion of some of Aum Shinrikyo's political leanings, and by the way, I want to note in this regard a miscellaneous archive show entitled Japanese Fascism, Its History and Significance for Contemporary Americans. I want to note fascism in Japan was brought about largely as the work, through the so-called patriotic or ultranationalist societies, which were sort of like a cross between organized crime syndicates, religious cults, and intelligence fronts. They had strong connections to the Japanese Imperial General Staff and the militarists, and they paved the way for the rise of fascism in Japan through a series of assassinations and terrorist acts. And there was a comparison made in the excerpt I'm about to read from The Cult at the End of the World between the Aum Shinrikyo cult and the Black Dragon, which is the most formidable of the Japanese patriotic or ultranationalist societies that I just alluded to. And again, those are discussed in a miscellaneous archive show available from Spitfire. In addition to maintaining hostility towards the Japanese government, and by the way, I would note that the early Nazi Party under Adolf Hitler was also created in a parallel structure to the state ministries of the Weimar Republic so that it could take power very quickly. In addition to the similarity between the parallel structure of Aum Shinrikyo to the structure of the Japanese government and the similarity between that and the early Nazi Party under Hitler, I would note, too, that Aum Shinrikyo maintained not only hostility toward the United States, but they also began to incorporate some of the anti-Semitic dogma of that Adolf Hitler embraced as well, including the notorious anti-Semitic forgery, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Returning once again to The Cult at the End of the World, of Asahara's hostility to the U.S. and Bill Clinton, we read, Asahara had long predicted a, quote, final war, unquote, between Japan and the U.S. After the news of the sarin residue, cultists repeatedly tried to pin the blame on the U.S. military. It made sense for the cult to target that military's commander-in-chief, President Bill Clinton. Clinton will be without doubt a one-term president, unquote, predicted Vajrayama Saka, the cult magazine, in ominous tones. At best, he will not be reelected. At worst, it would not be strange if he were assassinated, making it appear like an accident, unquote. How to stop the American president? One hint was provided by the always enterprising Inoue. Just 2 months before, the Aum spy chief had asked Dr. Hayashi if he would go abroad to pick up a package. I'm thinking of sending sarin to America, he said. By the way, there were news accounts right about the time of the Oklahoma City bombing in April of 1995 that a couple of Aum members were stopped at Disneyland trying to bring sarin to the U.S. Those were later dismissed by the authorities, although as far as I know, they have not been conclusively disproved. The leaders targeted by Aum were not merely agents of hell, the cult revealed. They were Freemasons, and worse yet, tools of the Jews. Aum had at last discovered the great Satan, the cabal of evil behind the coming apocalypse. Not surprisingly, it sounded much like the conspiratorial nonsense of a thousand other fringe groups. The cult journal attacking the emperor and others actually comprised a book-length treatise entitled Manual of Fear. The contents were a frightening, if predictable, mix about Jews and Freemasons running the world, bent on destroying Japan with Hollywood movies, rock music, junk food, and world war. Inside, Aum issued a declaration of war, unquote, on that slippery but menacing target, the world shadow government, unquote. Notice a similarity, by the way, between some of this rhetoric and the rhetorics of some militia groups, and in particular those militia groups that associated with explicitly fascist elements. And again, my feelings on the militias I've made quite clear. I think it's a mixed bag. Many of them, I think, are sincere patriots, although in most cases badly misinformed. A lot of them are outright raving Nazis and fascists as well. Continuing. Behind it all lurked the Jewish people. For nearly 100 pages, Aum writers recited a tired litany of anti-Semitic text, quoting at length from the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and similar racist tracts. The Talmud, Aum related, was in fact a murderous work. Jews were responsible for mass murder in Cambodia, Bosnia, and Rwanda, and meant to kill off 3 billion people by the year 2000. Most Japanese, of course, have never met a Jew. That has not stopped them from buying shelves of best-selling anti-Semitic books on how Jews run the world and secretly subvert Japan. Such crackpot notions were a natural draw for the Aum gullible, who added Jews to the top of a long list of demons to exorcise. But it wasn't the Jews alone who troubled Aum. It was, quote, Jewish Japanese, unquote. As scholar David Goodman points out in his paper on Aum and anti-Semitism, this apparently meant anyone tainted by the world outside Japan, including Japanese political and religious leaders. Even rival groups like the Mooney's Unification Church and the Buddhist Soka Gakkai were viewed as, quote, Jewish, unquote, sects by the cult. Quote, the object of anti-Semitism in Japan has always been the Japanese, not Jews, wrote Goodman. Aum was merely part of a long reactionary tradition of xenophobia in Japan. It was Aum's supreme truth as the Black Dragon Society, the ultra-nationalist savior of a Japan gone to ruin. Asahara, admirer of Adolf Hitler and military might have felt at home during the war criminals among the war criminals of the 1930s and 1940s. Even the literature now resembled that of wartime Japan. Quote, the enemy's plots have already torn our lives to pieces, unquote, screamed Aum's treatise on the Jews. Again, quoting, it murders countless numbers of people and, under the guise of high-minded words and lofty principles, plans to brainwash and control the remainder. Japanese, awake, unquote. And again, I want to note the similarity, and it's made quite explicit here to the credit of the authors, with the Japanese patriotic or ultra-nationalist societies. That, again, is the reference here to the Black Dragon Society, the most significant of the patriotic or ultra-nationalist societies that subverted Japanese democracy and brought fascism to Japan in the 1920s and 30s. Note also that the terrorist attacks by Aum Shinrikyo were one of the things that undermined the confidence of the Japanese people in the conservative socialist government that for the first time in post-World War II Japanese electoral politics had replaced the Liberal Democrats as the ruling party of Japan, as the party in power. The Liberal Democrats not only very closely connected to our intelligence services, but also a repository for the Japanese fascists who had launched World War II in Asia. One of the possibilities I have long held open is that perhaps Aum Shinrikyo was serving as a front for one intelligence service or another, whoever it might have been, whether it was Japanese, American, German, or perhaps a combination thereof. It would certainly appear that their basic orientation was essentially fascist with a capital F. And some of the technology that they were playing with should be noted with considerable alarm, I think, by objective observers. And that concludes the excerpt from the February 2nd, 1997 edition of One Step Beyond. Let's take just a minute to review what was covered in these two segments, ironically or tongue-in-cheek, entitled with tongue-in-cheek, Fun with Science. We began by taking a look at a program to inoculate school children with the against hepatitis B. The experimental hepatitis B vaccine appears to have been the vehicle for introducing AIDS into certain segments of the American population, hence my concern there. We then took a look at indications that, in fact, just as Ed Haslam said in his landmark book, Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus, the polio vaccine administered to millions of Americans between 1955 and 1963 was contaminated with a cancer-causing monkey virus entitled SV40.
After that, we took a look at an article from the London Independent indicating that just as American troops who were sent into the Persian Gulf War were inoculated with against a number of different diseases, and some of those vaccinations were kept secret, the British troops who were sent to the Persian Gulf also had a number of inoculations given them, some of them secret and experimental in nature, apparently, and apparently the British Biological Warfare Institution at Porton Down was involved with researching just what the results of those inoculations were. We then took a look at portions of a letter from then-Secretary of State Cyrus Vance to then-President Jimmy Carter in August of 1978, discussing the convention signed between the U.S. and USSR on the hostile uses of environmental modification. That convention was signed on May 18th, 1977, and prohibits, among other things, the causing of earthquakes or environmental modification to cause earthquakes. We then took a look at information from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists from the January-February 1997 issue, talking about a Soviet program in the late 80s to cause earthquakes. After that, we took a look at information from the book Angels Don't Play This Harp by Gene Manning and Nick Begich, which discussed similar American research being conducted under the auspices of Project Prime Argus. After that, we took a look at a New York Times article discussing a mysterious seismic event in Australia in May of 1993, which may have been an earthquake, possibly a man-made earthquake. Speculation was engaged in by the author of that article that it is within the realm of possibility that the Aum Shinrikyo cult may have in fact gotten a hold of something to cause earthquakes, whether a nuclear device or something else. That was a focal point of the Aum Shinrikyo cult, hence their dispatching of a team to Belgrade, Yugoslavia, or what was then Yugoslavia, to study the research of Nikola Tesla. Tesla died in 1943, and it is a matter of public record that he was able to cause a small earthquake in New York City using the principle of magnetic resonance. Although he has been dead for more than a half a century, much of Nikola Tesla's research is still classified, hence the caveat that I gave that one should not too readily dismiss the possibility that seismic weaponry has become a reality, despite official disclaimers from the powers that be. We concluded by taking a look at information about Aum Shinrikyo, discussing some of its fascist inclinations, and also some of the apparent similarity between Aum Shinrikyo and the so-called patriotic or ultranationalist societies that subverted Japanese democracy in the 20s and 30s and paved the way for the rise of fascism in Japan. Some of the archival references you heard were to tapes available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They can be contacted at Post Office Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179. That is in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. There's also an email address for Spitfire. It's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, that's one word, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. Once again, the mailing address, Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E at ix.netcom.com. And in addition to the half-hour segments that I've been producing for the last year and a half, now coming on 2 years or so, and the various interviews that I've done, Spitfire is also now accessing making available the archive shows as well. So please take note of that for those of you who have been trying to get a hold of some of the archive shows. A number of listeners have contacted me concerning a publication that I'm in the process of launching called Other Means. I cannot go into that in any detail because this is something I'll be making money from. People who would like to find out more about it should contact Other Means at P.O. Box 191710, P.O. Box 191710. That is in San Francisco, California, 94119-1710. Once again, P.O. Box 191710, San Francisco, California, 94119-1710, or they can reach Other Means by email at demory@well.com. Once again, demory@well.com. And I'm sorry, but I cannot give any more details about that. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.